Sticks a little spongy. Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. You know, sometimes you overhumidify a stick and it gets too spongy to smoke, so you gotta use a perfect draw to make it smoke again. Before we get into this dynamite episode, this little ninja sword here, it's made by a dentist in Orange County. I've shown it off a couple times. Just gotta be super careful. We stick it in the base of the stick. Oh boy, it's definitely got a pushback on it. And you just pull it out, shake off the excess. You want to get it to the point, in my opinion, you get the whole thing down the barrel. Just don't puncture the freaking edge of your stick. Pull it out kind of quick. In fact, one of my buddies saws it. He does like this. And I think he's right. That's why he owns the place. And I'm just a customer. You know. I'm still a Padawan. Welcome back to Deep Thoughts. It's a little bit windy out here, so I'm going to see if I can't use the wind signature in the mic. Just let it kind of go. And then I'll use that to cancel it out later. It's kind of a beautiful sunny day, except it's got partly cloudy. And guess what? These are real clouds made of water, absorbing light. They're fluffy, beautiful clouds. I'm going to put my hair up anyway. I had to drive to San Diego today. Take a friend who had to drop his car off in Anaheim to get repaired. So I've had a trip today already. I'm also starting to get some of the FaceTimes worked out with you folks on Patreon. So very cool to meet you guys. Guys being androgynous, hey. Guys and gals. Today we're going to talk about a subject that I used to sneak into episodes way back in probably the first 200 episodes at least. I'm going to call this episode Dopamine. It's a very specific name. So I used to teach courses on the chemistry of the brain as it relates to game design. But it also works for screenwriting and life in general. We all are usually familiar with dopamine and the fact that it's a chemical that your body creates that will give you an addiction pattern of electrical charges inside your brain. It is like the catalyst. It's like a drug. You know, when you smoke a drug, drink a drug, the drug's gone. Then you have your withdrawals. Well, dopamine is exactly the same, except the little drug manufacturing plant's inside your head. Okay. Where does this occur? Well, in the traditional sense, it occurs anytime there's a sort of reward system. You pull a one-armed bandit, you play some hand of poker, you fall in love, you kiss, anything that's good and anything that's bad. And that's the key. Let's say you do something really wonderful and virtuous in this world. You help a friend out, you do something selfless, and you recognize that you did that, and you see the benefits in other people's lives that you did that. You can get a nice dopamine drop because of that. Now, there is a bit of adrenaline factor to what I'm going to be talking about as well. But I think it's very, very important to understand that dopamine is very generic. So good things that happen to you could be dopamine driven. But also, bad things. What happens when you realize something good has happened to you and something bad has happened to you? Sometimes bad things happen to you and you go into the fight or flight, which is something bad's occurring to you now and it's continuing to occur and you're in danger. There's a car wreck about to occur. There's someone walked in the room and starts looking at you funny that you know doesn't like you. There's going to, you know, you're going to have to escape or throw down, one of the two. That can put you in fight or flight if you feel like your life is being threatened. Slightly different than just a dopamine realization of what's going on. Or especially someone who likes to instigate negativity. They're a drama king or queen. Like they're all queens. Not meaning female. But what if I told you that the stuff that makes you happy and amazing and feeling and all the stuff that you instigate or someone instigates around you that makes you feel bad. But it's the same thing. It's the same chemical in your brain that creates the state change. A way to think about it, just metaphorically speaking, not scientifically metaphorical, is you're driving down a 2-lane highway. You have a signal and you put it on the left signal and you got to cross the highway. It's the most dangerous turn you can make out of a right or left. And in one case, one time you turn left and you pull right into the driveway and there's your lover of lovers, your family, everything you ever wanted, the package that you wanted to have delivered today. You have a great experience. But there's another one that you pull in front of a semi and you get creamed and it's all over. The mechanisms that you're using to turn left is the same mechanism in both cases. One yields a positive experience and one yields a negative experience. It's a crude analogy of the state change chemical dependency that you have so that you can have a different feeling. You might be thinking, okay, that's great. All right, that's wonderful. Okay, you're going to talk about this kind of crap for an hour? Yes, but in one very specific thing that we need to recognize. I think it'll help you understand yourself, and I think it'll help you understand others. You ever wonder why people go on Twitter after you've been up there for about an hour? Or shoot, even 10 minutes. But you go up there and you're like, what is the fascination? Especially in this climate that we have today where everyone seems to use that platform to tell everyone else to go F themselves, right? And you're sitting there going, okay, you know, I mean, obviously you could find like-minded people here and there, but that's not the game. Even if you find someone like-minded, their posts are going to read, I hate this other group. I hate this person. And you might think, well, they, you know, they deserve to be hated. Yeah, well, you know, there are people that are pretty evil and we know it. We've seen them do what they do. They've claimed responsibility for things that we do not honor. But unless you're affecting change, really changing the world, I'm not sure what the point is of going up there in a non-intellectual capacity. Dr. Saul, Thomas Saul, he does post the most brilliant stuff. And I will say that if everyone was like him, you, for whatever opinion you might have, you don't have to agree with his alignment in this universe, we could have a good debate up there. It would be true debate and not just mudslinging. But here's the difference. Do you think that this Jack Dorsey guy just randomly created this website, which again was copying an element from Facebook, which was copying elements from all kinds of different forum discussion software, threaded software, all this other kind of stuff, and suddenly blows up just out of thin air? He beats the entire world in one day. No, it's part of the DARPA net of consciousness. You see, if you don't understand that dopamine drops during both negative events and positive events in different proportions, but they do, then they win and you lose. Let me give you my analogy of the proportions. And again, without scientific experiments being conducted, we're not going to know the actual ratios. If you do, let me know. What would be a great dopamine experience? I mean, a huge one. I would think a hug, an embrace, more from a lover than just a family member, because there's a very spiritual thing when you perhaps see a relative you haven't seen in a long time, a buddy from the army or whatever you haven't seen in a long time. But when you are connecting with another soul with the intent to create children and a life together, meaning you're going to go through hell and back till death do you part, that is much more magical and special, which is why we tend to care about our spouse's opinions more than our family's opinions, right? So let's just say that's very, very close to a 10 on the dopamine scale, meaning almost the maximum amount that dopamine can drop without taking a drug to cause it to drop. You could also say looking at a lottery ticket, and it's a winner. It's seven matching numbers. You will never work again in your life, and the unfathomable happens. Guaranteed that is a 10 to an 11, okay? You probably will dump more than your body's ever dumped in its life. But now let's say you're frustrated at the events of the world, whatever side you're on, and you go up to Twitter and you, hey, I want to show everybody how I feel, you know. We're all guilty. Trust me. I'm not better than anybody. What I tend to try to do on Twitter is get people to see the opposite side of what they're saying. Or there's so much propaganda up there, I just try to say something that cuts right through it. But anyway, you post something super negative. You're having that F you moment, like you're like, I got you. As much as I'm not a fan of Patton Oswalt, he did a skit 10 years ago or something where he was getting up in the morning, getting his coffee, and then sitting down at the kitchen table, and he was a responder to social media, and he would get you. He would say something clever that would just burn you to the ground, and then he'd pat himself on the back, or he'd say something, you know, witty and funny. I thought that was absolutely brilliant, what he did, because that's it. You know, if you can be a comedian, that's what I try to do. I practice my comedic thinking in posts to friends. And it's one of those friends of yours set you up so well. They set the ball up and they're just waiting for a spike. But they're not intending on doing that and you surprise them. That's a fun one, man. That's a super fun one. So you have millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people on social media. Primarily, this algorithm is almost pure on Twitter. Instagram, again, if you're using Instagram for political statements, you're missing the point of Instagram. Facebook, you know, it swells and it goes down. Right now, it's a bunch of virtue signaling, vaccine card displayers. It's the old story I heard when I first moved to San Francisco. The true intellectuals in San Francisco told me, do you know why that guy's giving money to that bum over there? I might say, why? Or, you know, to help him out. Nope. It's so they can go to work and go home and tell their friends and family that they gave money to a bum and that homeless person. And they just want to virtue signal the whole game. Same thing that's going on now. What's interesting about Twitter is that you can immediately see the old or the byproduct of the old statement, it's better to keep your mouth shut so that you don't look like an idiot rather than open your mouth and remove all doubt. Something to that effect, right? Well, Twitter is nothing but opening your mouth and removing all doubt as to whether or not you have a capacity to understand what you're saying. It removes all doubt as to whether or not you have a grasp of the real world or not. It reveals whether or not someone told you to hate someone, and that's why you hate them. And they told you to like someone, which is why you like them. And as to the opposition, which is you decided for yourself. You discovered if someone had merit or not. I mean, the truth about any one of the accusations of racism always boils down to the old statement, I don't hate you because of your race. I don't dislike you because of your race. I'm not saying bad things about you due to your race at all. It's that you're an asshole. And that just cuts through it. It's like Michael Collier said from Venice Beach, the godfather of Venice Beach in the 90s, he said, there's only one race and it's a human race. It's the last thing he said every single time. Like I say, a modification of George Carlin's statement, take care of yourself and someone else, right? It comes from George Carlin. I just thought it was one of the most beautiful phrases ever. It is my humble opinion that the reason why these people get up and go another round on Twitter is that they have developed a dopamine trigger for the content that's on there and for how they respond to the content that's up there. Now, we all know as well, there is a addiction dopamine trigger for looking at your phone and going, oh my gosh, I have an email. Oh my gosh, I have a notification on one of my social media sites. Let's get in there, you know. The one I'm guilty of most is if I think I've made a couple funny posts to friends, I'm eager to find out if other people think it's funny because I'm a writer and I want to know whether or not I still can just riff. It's like freestyle comedy, right, for me. I'm sure a ton of comedians feel the exact same way. Doesn't make me any better than anybody else. It's just that's my rationale for it. But now when we look at our own lives and we think about this vicious little cycle, it really causes, in my opinion, a reassessment of your entire life on one level. What are the things that you've been doing? Because it was giving you a dopamine drop and you never even knew it. You didn't know you were building up a chemical dependency for something. When I was younger, I used to think the following. If I could catch someone, and I didn't predatorially look for this kind of thing, but if I'm going about my life and I'm not hurting anybody, I'm not stepping any heads to get ahead, and I catch someone who is doing that, whether it be just unconscious or conscious, and then I try to bring it to their attention, hey, this is not fair that you're not doing, the work that you're assigned. Are you all right? And if you're okay, then why are you not coming to work and doing your work and everyone else has to do it? When I worked at the tax place, we had to code the forms. And there's about, 10 of us in a room. And there was a guy that was extremely lazy, bizarre dude. I mean, I can't even call him a surfer. He was more like just kind of a nerdy guy, but not quite totally nerdy in his lifetime. But he just was a shyster. And he realized that in his world, you could do the minimum amount possible to get your check, and you just get your check and you go home. He used to just sit and talk about how he was a manager in a previous job and how he was terrorizing his employees constantly. I mean, truly demonic crap this guy was doing. But I was, fast forward about 10 years, and I'm working at a startup in the Bay Area. So I'll give you a real example here. And it was a feel-good kind of hippie internet company. We specialized in online chat, and I had created some pretty renowned chat and a different technology they weren't using, but I got hired because I was doing everything that they were hiring multiple people to do, blah, blah, blah. And so there were a group of founders, and I don't know exactly how many, at least about 6. And there was a dude who just seemed to be goofing off constantly. Behemoth fat guy. Nice guy, but whatever. You either do your work or you don't do your work, right? And I don't remember what the dependency was, but the dependency was that he was goofing off and it was falling back on me, and I was already taking care of a gigantic problem that sales had created because they were selling software that simply did not exist in the world. And telling that, we'll have it done in 3 weeks. I mean, just an idiot sales guy who had no technical aptitude at all. He goes, well, how hard could it be? One of those kind of things. I'm like, well, apparently pretty hard because it doesn't exist. And I've coded already a ton of stuff on the net, right? But I think I'm at home. My boss calls me and he is essentially telling me that this dude who's a partner in the company, at least one of the founders, has chosen not to do his job that day, and that I'm going to have to pull a double shift for this other guy. And I'm talking to my boss. I'm thinking, that's bullshit. We're all grown people here. And you're calling me like this is normal. I'm already doing, all the art, all the coding for all my tasks. You got deadlines from this group, deadline from that group. And so I essentially chewed out my boss, but not directly at him, but at the other guy, and just called out the cards that aren't we adults here? And I basically said, I'm not doing this. There's plenty of people with their plates that have some space on them, and I don't have anything on my plate. In fact, mine's overflowing. And I remember he was he's a really nice guy, my boss. He kind of reminded me like a John Denver kind of guy. And when I left, because at that point I was like, I'm out of here. I've been contracted EA for 6 years. It's just funny, a little backstory to the final part of that. Anyway, I apply for this managerial position. I get it. I go into EA. My boss is absolutely sure that I don't have the professional capacity to run a company, or run a department, excuse me, because of the way I chewed him out. Thought I was going to blow up on everybody. And the true fact was, no, you just sucked at what you were doing. And I don't suck at what I'm doing. So later on, there was some weird collision, like a few years later, when my department had exploded. All these good things were happening. And I remember I met him and it was like, yeah, you know, my team got massive. My team was probably three times as big as his team. And he's probably 5 to 10 years older than me. And it was interesting. But during that process of me hooting and hollering on the telephone, I would get addicted to setting the record straight. I got addicted to summing up someone who is taking advantage of other people. I mean, that is the only thing that I can assure you that rubs me wrong on a level that is just like fisticuffs, man. We got a team. Everyone signed up for a part. I mean, shit happens, of course, in people's lives, and we write a blank check right there and then. But if nothing's going wrong and you're just being lazy day in and day out, not just one day. I used to get really silver-tongued, man, and I can think really fast. Just ask any of people that have pushed my buttons, man. They only do it a couple times intellectually, right? So I was guilty. I was guilty of this algorithm. And I rationalized it because I was doing, you know, the work of God sort of thing, right? Where I was setting a wrong right. You could say dressing someone down, but that's not the point. It's not to make the other person feel bad. It's just to say, dude, you're not playing fair. You know you're taking advantage of the situation. And stop treating me like I'm an idiot, like I can't see it. But in the end, it's sort of being mean. And it's turning into dopamine. We need to disengage from these platforms to deplatform them completely. In 2020, we watched companies that have been in business for 3 decades plus go out of business. Legendary companies going out of business. Because why? Liberal governors weren't allowing people to walk in and buy anything, and they weren't set up to supplant their brick and mortar sales with purely online sales. Amazon's the ultimate competitor, right? Everyone's so excited when the Amazon truck pulls by. And I've been forced to use it as well because COVID's got everything shut down and I need products that are very specialized that, you know, the grocery store doesn't carry a disc array. Man, when I record during the day, you notice why nighttime has started to appeal to me. But you can hear all the traffic. It's a way more busy rate. Which is good because things are getting back to normal. In the last 6 months, you know, I've been blessed with Blizzard destroying their company. Blizzard Game Company. Man, I used to play World of Warcraft. Like, do little things. Log in, do my little thing, log out. Now, it's destroyed. It's done. I don't even think about the game existing anymore. And it seems foreign that I used to play it. I tried to move over Diablo. I blew out a few characters to the top, and I'm just like, how do you guys do this? You know, I just mentioned it the other day. It's definitely a much better designed game, but I mean, for me in my early 50s, it's like, man, it's time to move on. What that's done is it's returned dozens of hours to me a month. Because I didn't play it hardcore anymore like I used to. We're going to have to look at our individual addictions to social media and online content because we're all different. You might be able to, you know, have a strong mind and say, okay, well, I just won't look at it. I'll just delete the apps off my phone. I won't visit them on my computer. That could definitely do it. And if that works for you, man, then you're just cold turkeyed. However many years of alcoholism we've had with social media. Social medialism. But if you don't understand your chemical properties of your brain, you could be dealing with potentially an addictive personality whereby you make this stand on Monday and you're like, I'm deleting all this crap, boom, boom, boom. And you go for 2 days and you feel pretty damn good. You're like, man, that was easy, man. That's great. By Wednesday, you're jonesing hard, man. And if you understand why you're jonesing hard, you might be able to develop that opinion, which is sort of, well, I've created a chemical addiction for my body, and I don't want to be a sucker. So I acknowledge that this is the case, and now I'm going to fight it tooth and nail from a conscious level of chemical addiction. I just recently told you about my story, or my friend, excuse me, a story about my friend who realized he had a huge drinking problem. He was in the music industry in Nashville. Just to kind of give you a little more qualification as to what type of stress he might have been dealing with. Very competitive. And his position, which I'll keep private, was a very difficult part of that job at the very top. Getting flown around a lot, lots of conversations. He got to the point where he was drinking like crazy. 17 years is what he said he was drinking. Felt like he wasn't an alcoholic, but he would drink because negative emotions would happen around him. But when he wasn't drunk, he didn't crave the drink just outright. He didn't have a chemical addiction to drinking to alcohol. He had the trigger to alcohol. It's still severe and it's still an important situation. But the psychiatrist tells my buddy, you need to rethink your life. You're not a chemical dependent alcoholic. So if you tell someone you're an alcoholic and they start treating you chemically, they could destroy you physically for problems that you don't have. Now, the kiss of death with either habits is that your liver disintegrates and two things occur. Well, one, when you drink alcohol, your liver has to process the alcohol twice because it's such a complex chemical. But as it kills the cells in your liver, you start to get high really quickly because your liver starts to die. And so instead of metabolizing it out of your intoxication envelope, it gives it to you 100%, dilutes your blood levels, and you get lightheaded and weird because your brain's running on half the gasoline purity. Let me ask you this. When we talk about getting out of addictions, for instance, and this is about getting out of social media addiction, nothing else, isn't it one of these situations where you either go to a 12-step group or you just cold turkey it, like either AA or you cold turkey? You want to get out of cigarettes? Some people smoke less and less and less and it's over. Some people just say no more. I'm a cold turkey kind of guy. But if I talk about social media, for instance, and you're like, what? Yeah, social media is providing addictions to bad information, to a waste of time, depending on your contribution. There are exceptions to all rules, so please understand, I understand that. But what if you had to write down a plan to get yourself out of this stuff? What if nothing else, if you're going to go cold turkey, you have to almost write a decree to yourself. I'm getting out of social media because it does the following things to me that rot my brain. Remember, you're only good at what you do, right? I told you about my silver tongue thing. Well, as I got older, I realized that the really beautiful game to do was for me to think in my brain about adults that treated me wonderfully when they had all the reason in the world to either spank my butt or scream at me or both. And they'd sit down with me and they had such a perspective of me being a kid at various ages when various things would happen. They'd say, oh, that's what you think. Okay. And you know, inside there, somehow they're completely different than me. They think I'm completely full of it, but they're able not to get angry, at least externally. And they would guide me through my own logic so I could see it, doing a little reflection session. And eventually get me to at least take away, at a minimum, the contradiction of my own words. I just used that perfect draw again on my stick, and I feel like I was in Tommy Boy pulling Thanksgiving dinner out of that shrimp. Smoking beautifully now. Big ass stem was left in the center. We had cigarettes and alcohol become a huge part of the United States of America in the 1800s and then the 1900s, especially moonshine, prohibition. It's almost as if prohibition was a strategic thing to do two things. One, make people realize how much they love the alcohol. Two, make a shit ton of money selling it in the black market. Cue the Kennedys, right? Then cigarettes, right? You got doctors recommending cigarettes to people. Why mention that? Well, it was a new thing to be addicted to. Had there been any previous moments in history that were recorded and legible to man in the 1900s, where someone said, you know, we used to be addicted to cigarettes in the, say, 1600s. This is a fake thing, but, and, you know, everyone got cancer and children were born premature or whatever. I mean, that's from drinking side of things. And, you know, drinking children are born with, you know, usually some sort of learning disability. If we had previous bouts of alcoholism and we learned that the liver gets destroyed every time you drink it, that it burns out brain cells such that your ability to get out of alcoholism through rational thinking gets impaired directly. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's like the cat disease that makes human beings love cats. It's the thing that, you know, rats eat this bacterial thing in the feces of cats, goes into their brain. And they lose the predatorial trigger that says the cats can kill you. And so they go cozying up to the cat and the cat eats them alive. I mean, that's some brilliant DNA right there, right? Now, there's different types of people in social media, right? You've got people in social media, and I've got a couple friends, sweethearts, but if they didn't have any social media, they'd be completely alone for the most part. And so social media is a way for them to reach out and have some human contact. It's also a way for them to call out for help if they need it, whether it be just insinuating something's wrong and then everyone starts, let's go by so-and-so's house and just see how they're doing. What is fascinating about social media for me, and in this, at this apex moment when we're trying to figure out should we like this or not, is that we know that there's like problems where people have emotional issues and they're going through a tough time and they might become suicidal. In a face-to-face situation in real life, well, we don't tend to have any mechanism in history to say, oh, well, I should tell some people I'm feeling very suicidal. We don't do that, do we? The next stage up before the internet was to harm yourself, to say, hey, I'm not going to go all the way, but I need you to understand this is so painful for me, but I'm willing to go all the way at a future time. And we have to utterly and completely respect anyone who's having that issue and get to them, you know, respect them, love them, give them hugs, remind them why we love them. With social media, what's interesting is you, if you have a heavy poster who's going through an issue in life, they have a much more three-dimensional method of carrying you through their experience if you're observant. And I know that a lot of you probably noticed this. Someone who's posting a lot for all those reasons I've ever told you, right? You know, the one that is very interesting is the post that says, someone loves me. And they'll always post them with their boyfriend or their girlfriend or whatever. See, this person likes me. It's very interesting. Nothing wrong with that. If you're having a good life, you're married, you're happy, whatever, you're in a relationship that's good. But there's that other person that you can kind of see it's maybe it's not real, but the person always changes. A person that posts negative things all the time about how they think that the world sucks and they're going to die soon, but they're like 23 years old. That's a call sign, people. And the thing is that what we tend to do, and I see this all the time, is people will, I don't know, they'll be bashful about it. And so they have a relative or a friend that's going through this issue. They have absolutely telegraphed that they're having an issue. And so the friend or the relative will call them, honey, are you okay? And they'll go, yeah, I'm fine. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. Click. Boom. They're gone. We need to stop doing that. In a small town, it doesn't work like that. Someone posts something that blatant, that serious. We don't intervene in a way that's like some television show where it's like, we're going to put you on air and tell everybody you're messed up, embarrassing the crap out of you. We just won't let you out of our sight. We'll remember everything that you enjoyed doing with us in the past and go force you to do that again. Hey, we're having a picnic. We're going to come pick you up. Get ready. We're going to go to the pool. Da, 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 da. Hey, could you make that thing again? That salad again? You know, do that thing. Hey, we're going to watch this movie. It's your favorite movie. You know, and we just swarm on top of them to the point we make them, you know, fake it till they make it situation, you know? I got to get another lighter. You know, a stick is really wet when you hit it with like a bonfire and it just sits there and goes, I'm wet. So now imagine in today's climate, someone is actually calling out for help, but someone's addicted to being mean. And they're so brain dead, the other person who's going to be posting to the person with the problem. They want to, you know, they have built up this habit of going around the web, pissing on everything, insulting people. I hope this isn't happening that much, but just imagine, you know, you got the kids that are drunk on Antifa BLM. And they're potentially running around posting some really acidic things, calling people names, telling people to kill themselves or whatever. And someone has a completely unrelated issue with any one of those movements. And, you know, there's been dozens of videos online where kids commit suicide on these platforms live. And just in case this is ever watched by someone who is young, I want to give a perspective. This is probably, honestly, the same information regardless of how old you are. Someone who's 20 years plus older than you will often see this the same exact way. But the stories that hit the airwaves are teenagers, you know, 12 years old and up, who have committed suicide on these platforms because either someone dared them to, or, I mean, what a sick bunch of people we are. But we'll hear about like a 15-year-old kid. Boy, girl, doesn't matter. Poor, rich, doesn't matter. And we'll hear that they took their own life for whatever reason. It doesn't have to be just a social media situation. But as a person who's older, we look at that and go, wow, there couldn't have been a reason why that was legit and rational as to why that kid should have considered suicide as a means to end their, you know, suffering. It's just this guttural feeling that we have. And it's not to be arrogant and dismiss the suffering of the younger person. That's not the opposite side of the argument. It's just, we feel like usually, probably people like yourself and myself, that we could have reached out and done something to distract, engage that kid, to get them to see the light, you know? But what's really strange is, I've had this happen in my family where we had a family member that was sort of getting on the edge there, younger cousin of mine. And I remember calling his mom, talking to his mom, talking to relatives, and, you know, I won't identify exactly where the relative is, but his cousin, so it's either an aunt or an uncle. And I remember saying, look, I live in California, get the kid out here, and we'll engage. We'll try everything imaginable. I mean, the kid could surf, he could go to college here, go be an actor, mess around, just work at a
chop shop,
or we could get him down to some really cool custom shops. You know, he could just kind of roam until he finds what he likes to do. But we need to, if the kid is on the edge of taking his own life, which is stuff I take very seriously, what are you going to do? You're going to wait until the kid actually does it and go, well, maybe we should have, you know. I think the kid's fine now. But there's a situation where parents find this out and they're more interested in themselves than their kids. They're like, don't tell anybody that I raised a kid who got to that point. When it has, sometimes it has to do with the parent. Very rarely, I think. I think it's just life in general. I'm giving you this example because I want you to be able to recall it if someone dismisses the notion that this is a big deal. Ah, social media is fine. What are you talking about? You don't need to get off that. Stay on there, man. I love you, man. Hey, man, pick up the phone, dial a number. You don't have to remember the number anymore. Just look at my pretty face and say, boom. Or if you can, and I understand that the world's gotten a lot bigger and smaller at the same time. I mean, it's smaller because we can always find some connection, but it's also bigger because we end up making friends with people that are really far away. And our kids tend to more commonly move far away from us because they can. They can find the jobs in the states clear on the other side of your country. Now, the other thing you have to be careful about, and this is just a little sort of side note for those of you who are very empathetic to others, people suffering, is that you want to really manage your life as you onboard folks that need help, because you are only one person. You can't save the whole world unless you're an absolute mega genius and there's one word you can say, one sentence you can say, one paragraph you can post that's going to go viral somehow. Very tough, man. I got to get another stick. This thing is so fucking wet. It will not stay lit and I'm not fighting anymore. I think God's trying to tell me, keep recording at night. Yeah, the whiskey sticks, bourbon sticks, apparently during this, in around the center of the box, they're so wet inside that they're not, they're just like lighting a wet cigarette. So I'm going to have to pop the tops on those before I smoke them, let them sit in my humidor for a week or two, dry them out a little bit. Might even just let them sit out in the open. It's got this little Cuban, Viguero. These are little, cute little sticks that burn really, really well and stay lit. Mm. Now, I'm trying to checker this episode between a social media behavior that I think is mystifying people. It certainly mystified me until I remembered that my two worlds actually belong together. The education about dopamine and the behaviors of being acidic online. Again, we're all guilty up to a point, depending on what kind of person you are. The one thing I try to stress in my classes on this subject matter is the following, and I think it's really super important. And I forgot where I just heard this recently, and I was so happy to hear someone else say it. Because I didn't have anybody tell me this. I had to figure it out for myself. And then when you make an assumption slash a deduction, and you think, well, you know, this is just something I'm thinking. Is it real? Well, I think it's real. And when you start hearing it echo back from the universe, and I'm sure it was written way before I had this idea, I just didn't get the paperwork. Again, no manual to life, which is why this show exists, to try and help. It's like a forum post about a vacuum cleaner that you can't get the documentation for anymore. You know, that's what this show's all about. I found if I push on this lever, the bag comes out. Your body listens to your emotions far more than it can listen to your rationale inside your brain. However, there is a connection between your rationale of your brain as well. So, like I told you in the cancer episode, it's very important that you get rid of stress out of your life. It's a matter of life and death for some of you. Don't care as much. If I came up to you and I said, look, this thing that's freaking you out right now, yeah. It could be something super personal. It could be a family issue, which again, it feels like it's going to last forever. It won't last forever. Even if you're being told off and they're never going to talk to you again, there's a way to get around that. Time heals all. But if I said, look, this thing that's happening to you makes you feel like you're kind of dying inside. If you ever had your heart broken by someone you're in love with, we often describe it as being a death-like feeling, a near-death experience. Well, that's how your body's perceiving it. And it can do sort of irrational things where you'll become angry and very aggro towards other people. That's what a lot of alcoholics get to, where their body's trying to fight back because it's going, we're being destroyed by chemicals being inserted in the mouth. So fight, fight, fight. Kill everybody in the room until you don't take this alcohol in your system. Your body doesn't know you're the one doing it. So if you're an angry drunk, that's why. In fact, it's almost kind of something you can, once you understand it, you can laugh it off and stop drinking. But there are something called neuropeptides in your system. And what they do is they listen to your perception of yourself. I am firmly convinced that aging is primarily a product of your perception of yourself. I was just looking at William Shatner last night because he took an interview just before he turned 90 years old. And yeah, he has a hairpiece, which is tremendously aligned with the way he looks. But that dude looks amazing at 90 years old. I don't believe I have ever seen a 90-year-old dude look as good as William Shatner in my life. And when you listen to him talk about it, he says, look, you know, I just ignore aging. I don't want to age, he says, so I just don't. And even though he's aged, and you know, he's got an eating issue for sure because he's all plump now. But and his metabolism is probably at zero at this point. But he looks amazing. His skin looks amazing. His eyes look amazing for his age. Now, we had dudes in my hometown that never stopped working. And I tell that old story from my high school where we're taking this, I'm taking this specialized math class from the shop teacher, the metal shop teacher. And a bunch of stuff, you know, a bunch of welding stations for the kids. And then there's a bunch of like built items. And this old man comes in a pickup truck and he's picking these giant things up, put them in his pickup truck. A couple of the big bruiser farm boys got up. In fact, one of them is a Golden Glove boxing champ. I mean, just a dude that knocked me out just because I bumped into him playing football once. And he's like dropping a nut trying to get these things in there. And finally, the guy picks his stuff up and leaves. And the funny thing was, is he came and picked up the stuff right in the middle of class. The kids jumped in to help him. Teacher didn't say anything at all. Just kind of, hey, they're right there, you know. And so finally, the dude who was dropping a nut goes, who was that guy? And my teacher goes, that's my dad. And they were like, well, how old is he? And he's like, oh, he's 95. Dude, you wouldn't have known. He had silver hair, like maybe Leslie Nielsen had before he passed, but that's about it. He's a big dude, though. So there are beautiful things that you can gain through consciousness when you're being positive, in my opinion. And there's negative things that you can gain by destroying your body and letting yourself get wrapped up in these negative algorithms. Study the way that you feel before you touch any of these apps on your telephone. And then study the way you feel after you're done using those apps. And tell me, are you getting a positive or a negative? If you're like me, you'll have some sessions where they're really funny. You feel like you really made some people laugh, brighten their day. And other times it's like, whoa, that was gross. Again, Instagram is almost, for me, 100% positive. Facebook's 50-50. And Twitter's 95.5 horrible versus positive. There's so much going on in the world that, and we've been convinced that we need to know all the news around the world 24/7. If something happens in some remote village in India and some remote city in China, Russia, and every other place, some Aborigine colony in Australia, we gotta know. We gotta know all the details. We don't. We absolutely don't. I don't know about you, but life for me is continuing to move forward. No matter how many years I get here, relative to the amount of years humanity is going to be on this planet, and trying to judge how much time it takes to learn something to impact some area of life, learn how to write a movie, learn how to fix some electronics, learn how to play some instruments, learn how to be nice to somebody, all those things take time. And I don't want to waste any time playing around on crap that isn't going to be beneficial. Now, can you be learning 24/7? No, no, which is why we all gravitate to these things. Typically, all my social media is when I am done to the point of exhaustion, not necessarily physical, but to mental exhaustion on a particular thing I'm doing, I switch things that I'm doing. I'll do 3D for a little while, then I'll do writing for a little while, something else, electronics for a little while. Then when I need to just totally say, okay, I can't move any other balls forward at this point, I need to do something utterly mindless and satisfying, I might watch a documentary, I might get into the comments for you guys, which is actually very fun. Again, you guys are tremendous with your comments. I might jump on Diablo on like real low difficulty and take a bunch of low-level characters and level them up like 100 levels in 20 minutes. And I get in, I get my fix. I'm just blowing up the whole dungeons because I'm at a real low level, but my character's really high. And I know that every time that we end a dungeon run and their character levels anywhere from 5 to 15 levels in one pop, they're in there spending all their points. They're having just this major dopamine fun thing. Maybe I'm getting them addicted to the wrong thing at that point. It's interesting that life is much more versatile than any one of these things that we're mentioning. In life, you can do anything you can imagine that you're capable of doing physically and mentally. That's awesome, isn't it? I mean, you could, again, what's fascinating about my life is that I've always been this way. I mean, always since the very beginning of my life, I'm involved in three things as a minimum. Well, so when I meet people my age and I say, well, what do you do for a living? And it's something kind of cool. And what do you do to relax? And it's something. But it's usually like they've got their work thing, they got their pleasure thing, maybe two pleasure things. That's it. But they don't produce anything. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. I sort of wish I could do that and not feel guilty. But when they start hearing about myself and others like me, I watch them and they're like, well, how do you find the time to do that? Oh my God, you know, it's that. And I'm just kind of like, well, let's put it this way. When I don't, it hurts. I always think I'm disrespecting life that has been given to me like a gift. And here, you know me, I believe in reincarnation, man. But it doesn't matter how many times I reincarnate, at least the way that I was built in this particular body, I'm feeling major, you know, push, 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 go, go, go. And it's fun. It's exciting. I just jumped off that cliff, base jumping, you know, and that's a metaphor, not a real life thing. But I jumped off on something I'd never done before. And oh my God, you know, even though I kind of flopped around for a little while, by the time I landed, the crowd thought I knew what I was doing. You know, and then the next time I jumped, oh man, I was just sailing through the holes in the mountains. Tell you one thing, I can't wait for summer. Summer. Get this wind all died down. Do some episodes and t-shirts, man. Well, for me, it's been an hour and 10 minutes, and it's been a grueling hour and 10 minutes of interruptions, sound, bad cigars. I have no idea how this is going to edit out. Lots of wind, lots of neighbor noises, lots of dogs, lots of motorcycles. So hopefully this isn't horrible. I do like to put out a couple episodes that are under an hour each season. This one I don't think needs to be belabored. So get over to deepthoughtsradio.com, bookmark the page. We have a new section on there, which is recommended content. It's going to be a bunch of stuff related to a lot of the episodes. But on there, just remember, we got a category section on there. So in case you come in, you're like, I love this type of episode. I really don't like this type of episode. Just go over there and click on the category that you like. It'll take you several hours to get through any one of the categories. And for instance, you know, social media, this platform of YouTube, if I tag certain episodes with the actual content, they can start ratcheting up the we're going to turn you off for no reason, give you strikes of which we'll never define, of which you can't appeal. So a lot of the tags that I want to put on videos are actually over there. But we have audio, video, social media, all new Brand Remastered Season 1, a store, and two ways to donate to the movement, PayPal and Patreon. We're up to 18 Patreons. I think that's one of the highest we've ever had. Some of you are donating, you know, amazing amounts of your resources, but it doesn't matter if you're just putting a buck in. There's some content over there you won't get over here. There's at least a couple of videos that you can't get. And then you get everything ahead of time. So the second I'm uploading it from my computer, I post it on Patreon. And I mean the second thing I do once the streaming starts going up is tell you guys it's there so you can get in. You have to wait a couple minutes for it to upload and watch it, but that's where you get it first. I can't, for reasons of technicality, release the podcast to anyone ahead of time, because no matter what, that podcast will be public. And so in order to keep exclusivity, it's just got to be video only, unfortunately. I can't even do it on BitChute. But I hope you guys have enjoyed getting the episodes in the middle of the afternoon, U.S. time, Pacific Standard Time. I do apologize. There's no easy way to get the videos out to Europe at a decent hour, or Australia. Hopefully it's a decent one time frame for Australia. When you try to schedule a video in YouTube, it then becomes private until the schedule fires. And so I can't use scheduling because then my Patreons can't get it either. So there's definitely some improvements there that could be added to the site. You know, well, maybe one day YouTube will make enough money to hire some coders. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next super windy, noisy day. Over now.